Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In this podcast, chat about the draw against Sunderland, the review of the January window, and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and this is where Borough Matchday Chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the trap. Goal!
Ravinelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravinelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Matt. We are the Borough podcast that gives you all of your Borough Matchday chatter in a podcast. And we're coming off a 1-1 draw against Sunderland today. Marcus Forss gave Borough the lead and we were pegged back right at the death. It was quite a few minutes ago and we nearly threw it away.
Football cliches moment there, Johnny.
Football cliches indeed. Borough were denied 3 points, of course, in the derby. It's not a derby, but it is a derby. It is a derby, but it's not kind of as a derby, but it might not be. Depends how you feel about it. I don't really know if it is a derby. Is it a derby? Who knows? It might not be a derby. Should we just move on? Because it's not really a derby, so we shouldn't really talk about it.
No, it's not a derby.
It is a derby. It is a derby. Sunderland won 1-1 today. I'll have you know.
I know. I'll take it away. We'll Borough 12 on 41 points. Got a game in hand on the playoff teams around us as well. And we're 4 points off as well. But guys, key takeout from the game as well. As I always ask before I move into the Sunderland game. But Matt, I'll come to you first. What's your one key takeout from the game yesterday? Well, today. Oh my God, yesterday, today. It was a few hours ago.
I think it's that I feel like we're just going around on an endless cycle of inconsistency and mediocrity. I feel like post-January, it feels like January didn't even happen. It feels like we're just exactly the same team, slightly different personnel. We've got players coming back, which is good, but it just feels like it's just more of the same from what we've had throughout the season. We can't pull a run together. We're not really consistent in our performances. You don't quite know what Borough's going to turn up game to game. And once again, in a game where, at least in the second half, I felt like we took control and we had Sunderland where we wanted them, we still failed to convert the 3 points due to a low XG chance. I don't quite know how low XG it was, but it's another opportunity that came from nowhere, somehow found its way into the back of our net due to an individual error. So it just feels like we're on this ride that's just going round and round and round. And I want to get off it. To find some consistency, I want to find some form. I want to just have a fully fit, solid Borough 11 week in, week out. But it's just not happening. And it's just like we're going round and round and round. And I don't know when it's going
to
end.
To make you feel any better, Max, I know you love the XG and the goal chance, but it was their lowest chance in terms of XG in the game and the score from it, just to make you feel a little bit better about yourself.
Cheers, mate.
But yeah, just sort of throw that in there. But Dana Van Boremol, what was your key takeout from the week?
I think my takeout is that although we are within touching distance of the top six, and that needs to be stressed, this game today was yet another example of many, it has to be said, that back up my belief that we will not finish in the top six come the end of the season. Like, sorry to be negative about it. It's not irrational. It's not based off the game today solely. It's a belief that I've held for a few months now. We're just inconsistent. Our home form is relatively poor. We have fitness issues and we don't have a striker, really. Right now we don't. And then when you look at Latilath and Corburn, there's just a general lack of depth and quality there. So, yeah, today was just another example that really does back up that belief that I don't think that we will finish in the top six, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong, though.
Maybe. Who knows? It's not fully written off yet. You know, obviously, there's only 4 points. Got a game in hand, of course. So things can definitely change, but I can definitely see the landscape of the Championship, who've invested heavily in the January, who hasn't, who are happy, who aren't really happy, who want to go for it and who don't really want to go for it. And, you know, Borough could happily get at the playoffs, and I think they could definitely do it still. It's just, I think it comes back down to what you guys were saying there on the inconsistencies. And I would say today's game, if you wanted to look at Borough's season in a football match, this was probably the game to see it. Great moments. Marcus Forster's goal is absolutely superb. You know, we got away with a couple of things earlier on in the season. Well, when we were on that run, a big chance. Of course, we gave away a sloppy goal and also a chance which we shouldn't really be conceding. So you could have had all of that and you could have said, well, that was typical Borough, that, and not really given Sunderland the sword when we needed them. I think when we were ahead, we could have really finished that game off today, and we never, and it was just very typical of us not to do that. It shows as well, like, even with the players that came off as well, like Greenwood and Force, we both had cramp, but at first you were like, oh no, this is an injury, here we go again. And that again just builds into the narrative of what our season has been. It's pretty much just a season of injuries and inconsistencies, but that's football, you know, that's football. And I think we'll be fine, but I think we should have probably beat Sunderland today. Especially when we're in that ascendancy in the second half, to draw it was a bit disappointing. But we will chat about it now, because Dana, I want to hear your overall assessment, because to go ahead in the second half after, I would say, a very cagey, fast-paced first half, and then to tie is... I don't know how you're feeling about it, because I personally felt a little bit disappointed leaving the ground.
Yeah, it felt like a defeat, to be honest. I thought we started the game poorly. We lost the ball within the first 14 seconds, and I thought, oh God, here we go. Because I feel like you can maybe gauge the opening phases of a game by literally, like, one of the first involvements of it, or maybe that's just me being harsh. But yeah, it was flat. The atmosphere was flat in the home quarters of the stadium. It just, we didn't have a lot to really react to. But we did have a big chance through Finn Azaz, who I think if he just gained a little bit of composure and kept that shot down, we would have been 1-0 up. But in the interest of balance, they had a big chance. I do not know how they didn't score through Barr. It was a really good goal line clearance from Rav. But I mean, Barr took that shot as if there wasn't a player on the line. Like, he took it as if it was a complete open goal. And like, it was very lapse and blasé about it. The shot was really weird, but then we picked it up in the second half. I think one of the things that I noticed in the first half is we just didn't have a lot of width, and actually it was them that were attacking us down the sides, and in the second half it was us that was attacking them. They still held that threat, of course, with Jack Clark, who's one of the best wingers in the league. But we picked up in the second half. I think we deserved our goal. It was a brilliant finish from Marcus Force, and it felt like we were comfortable. Like, the game kind of descended into a little bit of a lull, but I don't think they really posed much of a threat. Their performance fell off a cliff in the second half. It really did. And then they score a goal out of nothing. And as much as people want to say that it wasn't Glover's fault, it was his fault that the ball ended up in the back of the net. But if you want to unpick that goal, we'll probably talk about it in a second. There was just so much wrong with it, really. We got pulled apart on the counter-attack, and even the attack that we did have, I'll mention it now, actually. Engel has the ball, he cuts it back. Corburn and Silvera run into each other's space, and there's absolutely no one that picks up that ball. So I'm thinking, in terms of our attacking, before I speak about our defence, that was poor. Poor from Silvera, probably to pick the same run as Corburn. But also, we got absolutely caught out on the counter-attack. Players flooding over to Jack Clark's side and leaving the other side completely free. That was obvious. That ball from Clark to their player, whose name I can't pronounce, was so obvious. And it's just frustrating the manner at which we conceded that, because it obviously meant that we didn't win the game.
Yeah, and it was a typical counter, but I was a Borough press forward. But on the attacking side of things, I always think a good strike is in the back post. I always think that the back post is the area where the ball will naturally come to. And it felt like he was going too heavy on the front post.
I don't mind that Corburn makes that run. My issue is that Silvera makes it. Like, Silvera, yeah, in that situation, I think he can see Corbyn, but Corbyn probably can't see Silvera because Silvera's a little bit behind him. I just don't know why he chose to make the same run as him. And obviously, in the end, it meant that, like, is the ball from Engel bad? I wouldn't say it was.
Really? No.
But maybe in terms of decision making, he should have maybe spotted the runs being made at the near post. And yeah, there's so much to unpick from that goal, both defensively and offensively.
Yeah, Matt, do you think in general, like, obviously, when Sunderland League, like, do you think that Borough did enough to win the game?
I don't think we did. I think we had a period in the second half where we had Sunderland right where we wanted them. And I think that was the period to which we would have, maybe last season, we would have killed the game off, put them to bed, hit a second, third, and that'd have been it, game over. First half, as you say, was, I think we got let off a couple of times. I know Finners has had a fantastic chance, which I'm surprised he didn't do better with. I sort of associate him as a player who is quite composed, and I would have thought he'd have took a touch and just set himself and tried to place that without, like, slinging his foot at it first time. But we had a big let off. I think Barr had another really good opportunity where he didn't square the ball. He sort of side-footed it into the side netting. He had Bellingham coming up right behind him. I'm sure there were players coming in the box. Even if he just squares it into an area, anything can happen. So I feel like we were let off there. Obviously, Rav bails out of jail as well. So I think on the balance, the first half could have went either way. Arguably, Sunderland slightly maybe had the better of the chances. And then second half, we really had them right where we wanted them. I don't know if it was the fact that we stepped up or, as Dana said, they just come out and fell off a cliff. I mean, I said to you during the game, Johnny, they just seemed to lose all their tempo, their shape, their composure. They just looked like a different side, and that's where I think we should have killed the game off and put the game beyond all doubt. Essentially, we didn't. And I guess you're always leaving the door open for the opposition to catch you and have that one chance. It only takes one chance, and it seems like this season all teams need is one chance against us, because it'll find its way into the back of the net somehow. And it's just frustrating that once again it doesn't. Because I don't even think, is it Rusin? I mean, his first touch was bad. The strike didn't seem great either. And yet it somehow found its way into the near post. So, yeah, it's disappointing. But I think we had a period in the game where we should have put it to bed and we didn't. So I'd argue we probably didn't do enough to win the game in the end.
It's interesting. I thought we did. I thought we did enough. Once we got ahead, I thought there was we were doing enough in the game to kind of win the game. Also, we didn't create too much. We felt like we were on the front foot. We were creating the better chance, like the half chance we were having better of the play. To draw it was a bit disheartening. And to be honest, I know there'll be a few Sunderland fans listening. For me, I think Michael Beale's absolutely killed Sunderland. And I cannot believe that he's made them that bad in the space of seven or eight games. I think he's killed their outlet completely in Jack Clark and just not made them fun. I know it sounds ridiculous, but under Mowbray, I was quite watching Sunderland. If you're watching them, if the game was on telly, you go, oh, well, they were creating quite a few chances. They were quite fun to watch. Oh, boring. They're awful. And it frustrated me leaving the ground. I was thinking we should have really put them to the sword and just finished them off. But it's frustrating. And that's their pretty much full strength squad as well. And it just annoyed me. That's what annoys me even more with them at the moment. But yeah, I think if I was on the fan, I'd want Michael Beale at my club immediately. Because
I think
it's like actually impressive how you can make a side who is really good on the transition and really... If you've got a space, they really like maximise it, especially Clark, and obviously they'll bring a winger on as well. But yeah, like they were so good at that, and then they've just went, okay, well, we'll try and control things and become really narrow, which Beale teams do, and it just nullifies everything. I just don't understand it. But anyway, this is not on the podcast, but it's just to say, like, on record, that get him out because he's off. Well, actually, no.
Keep him in charge.
Keep him in charge because it's actually quite funny. But as a footballer, just get him out. But yeah,
Hashtag feeling
for life. I was going to say, obviously, we know that Glover could have done better, but then I know like football is very, very reactionary. You can see it in the forums, you can hear it on Twitter, you can hear it wherever. And one minute you're the best player in the world, the next minute you're the worst thing in the world, and everyone hates you and gives you death wishes. But do you think people will probably forget the good work that Glover's already did in the last few games just based on the one mistake that he did today?
I hope not, but yeah, you mentioned the reactionary opinion post-match. I did see a few tweets, and I must say that this is probably a minority, or at least I'd hope, of people saying, oh, I knew that he was crap. What? Like, what? Like, he's been fine. And this comes from someone who... I went to the early rounds of the Cup, and there were a few iffy moments of his, and that made me think he's a bit suspect. And obviously the opinion that we heard of him when he signed was very much of that narrative, that he's a little bit suspect. He's got a few mistakes in him. Obviously it was a mistake today, but that's really the only one that we've seen of Tom Glover. He's been really good for us. You know, he's made some really good saves. He's been solid. I think his commanding of the box has been good. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh yeah, I knew it. I knew he was crap, because in truth, at least in my opinion, he's been absolutely fine. He's made us pretty much forget that Senny Dieng exists, apart from Matt, who probably has a poster of Senny Dieng somewhere in his room there. So yeah, he's been fine, and this was a blip, we would hope. But yeah, it was unfortunate for Borough, because we did seem like we were not sailing towards the win, but it didn't feel like Sunderland were a threat. It is a mistake, and I can't say it's an unfortunate mistake. It's just a poor mistake. But it's a rare one from Tom Glover. I think he's been good for us this season when he stepped in for Dieng.
And what do you think, Matt? Do you think, in fact, just in general as well, I know we speak about it quite a lot when we sit next to each other, but like in general, do you think we're quite quick as a fan base to write players off, like especially after just one mistake? Dana's nodding.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm seeing people say that Zaz is shy, and I'm like, my God, he's had about 2 seconds on the pitch. Like, give him a chance, man.
Yeah, I was going to make the point about Zaz. You hear it at the game as well, and you see it on Twitter, and the guys, how many minutes has he had? He's clocked up 2.5 games for us, if that. I think it is unfair. I think Borough fans, I mean, it probably happens everywhere, but yeah, Borough fans do react too quickly to players. And I think especially with the model that we have now, in terms of we're looking to sign players who are not dropping down a level to come to Borough. They're not big players who are coming here on loan. We are naturally looking for gems who are probably going to have played at clubs who are below Borough, smaller clubs playing maybe in the same league, like Plymouth, for example, or maybe even teams from lower leagues. So naturally, you've got to expect, if that's the sort of player Borough are bringing in, then they're going to need a period to step up. They're probably playing with better players. They're probably playing in maybe a better system, a different system. And I think naturally, even just going to any football club, you need time to bed in. It doesn't matter if they're a bigger club, a smaller club or whatever. But I think naturally with us, when we are bringing players who are going to see this move as a step up in quality and a step up in their career, then yeah, they are going to have to take time to get up to that standard. And I've definitely seen it with Azaz. I'm a bit worried he's going to become a bit of a boo boy already. And I think there's a lot of potential in Azaz. And I think he will settle in and become a really good player for us. And it is a shame to see people reacting to him so quickly. But we've seen it time and time again. I think I remember seeing it with Morgan Rogers, and yet you had the same people kicking off that we sold him when we did. So football fans for you.
Yeah, and I think on Azaz as well, we were saying earlier, like, I would love to see Finn Azaz just in that central position, really. I was saying that's where he flourishes, and you could see like little glimpses of him today where he was able to like unlock a defence just in that position. And when McGree comes back, I would love to see McGree and Azaz, and then probably force on that right if and when Jones is out, how long ever he's out for. And, you know, I'd just like to see more of it, because I think there is definitely a player there. But just in general, I think in terms of players writing them off, Lucas Engel, Morgan Rogers, just to say this season, Rav Vandenberg was a boo boy for a good 4 or 5 games at the start when he made that error at Huddersfield. You know, you've got Sinny Dieng, you've got Glover, you've got Balassa, you've got Tube Rakpom, you've got, trying to think of who else. You could probably, if you really sat down and thought about it, how many players have just been completely wrote off in a very short period, and then they've came good or they've had really good moments. And I think it's just in general, like, if you're starting a new job, you're never good on your first day or first week or whatever, first month, because you're still like kind of learning things. And I don't get why football's so different. Yes, it's the same game, but it's just a different environment, similar to what you do on a day-to-day. Same as like buying a car, you know what I mean? You're buying a new car, you know how to drive a car, but it's different, so it's not as what you're used to. So I just don't know. I'm kind of very anti like just writing players off. I'm just like, yeah, they might not be great at the moment. They might have a bad game, but they're not a robot. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be perfect every game, right? But go on, Dan. Are you going to join?
I was going to say, I think you can flip it to the other side as well. And there's fans that go a little bit they get too excited about a player on their first start. Like, I'll always remember tweets about Marcus Bettinelli being a really, really good goalkeeper at the beginning because he kept clean sheets. And then look what happened with him. Really the worst goalkeeper that I've seen. And we've had a flurry of really bad goalkeepers. So, yeah, I think it's just nice to have a balance, isn't it? But I think with the football discourse, a lot of the time, it's either you're too high or you're too low and there's no middle ground. So, yeah, I mean, we come on here and we speak, and I'd like to think that we're balanced. But, yeah, sometimes you can get overexcited, of course. It's an emotional sport. And when you see a player play really well, or, you know, they have a really good introduction, sometimes that can be amplified in regards to how you speak it, how you project, how you've taken and received their performance. But yeah, it's just nice to have a middle ground, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of players that were written off straight away, especially by a manager who is now angry by ham sandwiches, and that is Chris Wilder. And Marcus Force, of course, and he scored for Borough today, and there was a lovely stat from Sean Wilson as well around Middlesbrough and where the goals are coming from this season. And, of course, with him scoring that, we've had 8 players now in terms of Crooks, Force, Coburn, Rodgers, Greenwood, McGree, Jones, and who am I missing? Oh, that one.
Laugh.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Elliot, right in front of my eyes, and I missed it. I've all scored 5 or more goals this season. The last time that happened was in 1901, 1902 season. We all know how that season ended as well. And obviously, Johnny Howson is closest to that on 3. But Marcus Force, I just want to give him some loving, I think, because he's come back. It's 3 and 4 for him, and he just looks like rejuvenated and so happy, and what a great finish as well. So, Matt, do you love Marcus Force? Because I love Marcus Force. Do you love him?
I adore Marcus Force. Also, about that start, I think Johnny Howson actually played in the 1901-02 season.
He did. Yeah, he was captain as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah, I do. I just, there's some players who you just have such a soft spot for, and I just love Marcus Force. And I've just loved, since he's come back, I think he's shown exactly why he's the best finisher at the club. And the way he took that goal was absolutely outstanding. I didn't quite clock at first how good his first touch was. I just obviously saw the ball fly in the back of the net. But when you look back at the replay, the ball deflects and it comes at him so quick. Not only does he touch with his weaker foot, he then turns, hits it so sweetly past the goalkeeper. It's just, that is the, you know, when you look at a centre forward and you want that added little bit of extra quality in the final third, and we're looking at Lath and we're looking at Coburn and we're thinking, yeah, okay, they're good in moments. Certain games might suit them, but that little extra sprinkle of, I don't know what you want to call it, stardust, quality, whatever it is, he has that. And I think if you just put him in the right place, give him the opportunities in front of goal, more times than not, he'll hit the target, and more times than not, he'll probably go in as well. It's just such a fantastic goal. I love him. I'm relieved. I believe it was just cramp that he went off with earlier. I was a little bit, I think as we all were, very, very concerned when he went down a couple of times. But I love him. I want to see him played up front. I want to see him up front and getting given chances, because there's no doubt he'll put more of them away than not. So I adore Marcus Force. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I want to come to the subs in a moment. But Dana, I'm assuming you want to give some love for Marcus Force as well.
Yeah, it was an incredible goal and a great reaction to it as well. The Riverside exploded. And actually on reactions, Matt mentioned it there, the quickness of being able to react to that deflection that obviously took the ball into his path is really good. He is a fantastic finisher, we know this. And there's a big conversation around, should he play through the middle? Should he play on the right? I think as long as you get him in the box, because he can get into the box playing on the right, you know, we've seen it with Christian Stuani in the promotion season. I think give him the chances, I'd be fairly confident that he could put them away. We need to make sure that he stays fit from now until the end of the season, because I think he could be a big, big player in Borough's playoff push. I don't want to be bedwetty here, but I think if Marcus Force gets injured again and is out for a period of time, I would probably say that I'm 90% sure that we won't get in the playoffs. And I mean, I'm already, you know, obviously on the side of we won't get into the playoffs, but yeah, I think he's going to be a big, big player for us, because he's a fantastic finisher, and that showed it. That was the prime example of Marcus Force's finishing ability. It's good to have a player like him on our books.
100%. And, you know, I kind of want to see him on the up front, but then I'm like, you know, if you're scoring goals from the right and it works, then cool. Yeah. Just keep doing it.
It's not going to happen, is it, Johnny? Unfortunately, yeah. We can try and manifest it, but I just don't think Carrick sees him as an option there, really. Well, he does see him as an option there, but I think he primarily sees him as that right-sided forward.
Yeah, and look, I'm at the supporters forum tomorrow, so that'd be my question. I'd be like, look, can we just try Force in the middle for a couple of games, see how it goes? But I wanted to come back to the subs side of things, because a lot is made about substitutions. How do they impact games? How can they come in and influence some key moments? And, you know, Sunderland made some subs, which probably impacted the game to some extent. Borough subs probably impacted it in a negative way. I would say they were more forced than anything. Part of the problem with the force going off. But in your opinions, how did they impact Borough's performance? I think, you know, Silvera coming on for Force, Corburn coming on for Greenwood, O'Brien came on for Barlasser as well, and then Thomas for Engel. And Matt, how do you think they influenced things for Borough?
It's a tough one. I think Carrick's hands were forced with the substitutions. I was quite surprised by the number of fans who were criticising him for them substitutions after the game, when it was clear Greenwood was struggling, Force was struggling. We do not want to risk anyone getting any more injuries. So it was unfortunate, but I think it really did, it upset our flow a little bit, and the game was never really the same from that moment on. I think Sammy come on and did all right, but I actually thought Greenwood had one of his better games. I think instead of him coming towards the ball, he was getting in behind a lot, and he might have not timed his runs perfectly well every single time, but it's good to see him getting in behind and giving the opposition a problem off the ball rather than him, you know, only really doing much on the ball. So yeah, I think having that option in behind might have affected us. I think Josh Corburn was fairly ineffective when he came on. I was a bit surprised to see Barlasser be taken off. I thought Barlasser was actually having a pretty good game, and I'm gonna say something that a lot of fans might not, but I would have took Johnny Howson off if I was to have took a midfielder off. I know Hackney didn't have the best game either, but I would not have took Barlasser off at that point, if I'm honest, out of the three midfielders. So yeah, it's just weird, isn't it, how substitutions can just change the flow of a side. I don't think Carrick should be criticised as much as he was for the Greenwood and Force substitution, but I was a little bit unsure on the Barlasser one. I don't know what you guys think about that, but yeah, it's just unfortunate circumstances, isn't it, that we had two players who were playing such a big part in how we were attacking both go off at the same time.
Yeah, I'll let you jump in, Dee, because it looked like you had a point, and then I'll jump in afterwards.
Yeah, I agree. Barlasser coming off was a surprise. I mean, because I saw Corbin first, and then every time that I looked back over to the dugout, there was another player that was ready to come on, and I was like, three at once? That's interesting. I didn't actually see Greenwood struggling, but I think that change in particular was really important. As Matt said, Greenwood was actually far more effective through the middle in that number nine position than he has been on the left, and I think it was because he was able to make those runs. And again, as Matt said, he didn't time them perfectly every time. He did get in once for that Finnes as chance, actually, where he timed it perfectly. So there's intrigue and maybe potential there in Sam Greenwood. I know he came through the academy at Sunderland and then at Arsenal as well as a striker. So there's maybe potential opportunity within that. You spoke, Johnny, about opportunity within unavailability and selection problems. There's one there for Greenwood. But it's just the difference in profile between him getting in behind and really testing and stretching Sunderland, because they had a high line in that game, and Corburn, who isn't going to be a threat in behind. And I think with Corburn, there's a big conversation around him. I just don't think that he's up to the required level. And I'm not saying that based off that cameo. I don't think he suits our style. I really don't think he suits our style. I think we're wanting a striker really that can do a little bit of everything, that can stretch a team, that can maybe drop deep and has good movement. And I just don't see that from Corbin. So I think that was probably the substitution that altered it the most, in my opinion, because we didn't really have that threat in behind necessarily. And with Silvera, he's still finding his feet. And he was in Qatar like 2 seconds ago. So I was really surprised to even see him in the squad. But yeah, substitutions worked for them. They brought on another 1v1 threat through Roberts, because I don't think Barr was particularly great. And then for us, it had the adverse effect, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think to answer your question as well, Matt, I would have probably taken Howson off as well. I think that Ballas was playing really well, and it was just a shame to see. And then Greenwood, it was near us actually. It went, the ball got switched over, and you could just see like something in his knee or whatever. He just hobbled, didn't he? And it was like, oh god. And then like he went off, and then he was like trying to stretch on the sideline. I don't know what he did, to be honest, but I felt like something just went in that moment. And then in the subs as well, like, yeah, we'll come to Corbin in a moment when it comes to podcast questions. But for everything else, I thought, yeah, they were just not as effective as we wanted them to be. But let's move on. Let's move to podcast questions now. Fire! Fire! IS podcast questions. Every week you get the chance to ask us a question via email, theborough breakdown@hotmail.com. Tweet us at borough_breakdown or join in our Telegram chat with all 400 Borough fans. Chant everything but Borough. Sometimes we do, especially on match days. It's been very active today. And the first question is from Jack. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to read this, Jack, because you've upset me already. He says, oh God, I'm crying up already. I'm well enough. He said, do you guys think... do you guys think that Engel is up there with Giles? I'm struggling to see it myself. Not adventurous and defensively, positionally lets himself down. Would you have gone in for Giles in January? And are you as annoyed as me to see him at Hull? I think we should get a good consensus on this one. Personally, I really like Lucas Engel. I think he's on the leash a bit too much. And I think he's better defensively than Giles, 100%. But just let him off the leash because his left foot is a wand. And I'm sticking to it. Jack, you've insulted me and upset me. I'm going to defend it now, John. But Dan, you're nodding at me and you're going, yes.
I was nodding enthusiastically for those that are listening and not watching. Honestly, I agree. Let him go. Let him go down that left-hand side. I really don't know how we utilize it. Well, I know how we're utilizing him. He just seems to be holding back. And the thing is, the way that Borough play, the fact that we've got a left winger coming in field, there's a whole runway there for Lucas Engel to do his thing. And I just think that he's shackled a little bit. But then again, it could well just be him. We don't know. It could be the way that Carrick wants Borough setting up. Maybe he wants Ayling on the other side to be that width. But I thought we really struggled with that width in the first half, and there were so many times that Lucas Engel could have got up onto that left flank and offered us an outlet out wide, and we just, again, like earlier on in the season, the distribution from the left centre-back, which was Rav, to the left-back just wasn't there. Obviously, Rav is right-footed, I believe, so maybe that was a problem, but I want to see him get forward a lot more than he does, because there were some really good balls that he played in, particularly in the second half where, obviously, he was on the left, and then he filtered that ball through on the inside, down that left channel, and they were really good balls. His delivery in terms of whipping the ball into the box doesn't seem as good, but then I'm thinking, you know, we had Ryan Giles last season, so maybe I've got him in the back of my mind. But yeah, I don't like the way that we're utilising him. I think he's developing well, but I think he could be a lot better based on how Borough are using him, and I just think that he's being held back a bit.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Matt, what do you think?
Like you, Johnny, I think he's absolutely brilliant. And yeah, some of the balls he not just like down the channels, but some of the balls he plays centrally as well are just so accurate. Like he'll fizz the ball into the center, whether it's the 10 or whoever it is, and they're always on point. He drills them in and they're absolutely brilliant. And there was one he played in behind to Sam Greenwood second half, and Greenwood got in and was 1v1 and he put his shot wide. But it was another unbelievably well-weighted ball. So, yeah, I think Engel's fantastic. I think, again, let him off the shackles a bit, see what he can really do. But I think he's been amazing. And I'm not annoyed that Giles is at Hull. I'm over it. Just about.
Oh, I am. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about this part of the question. I am only because, I mean, it was obvious. I'm sorry, it was so obvious that it was never going to work out at Luton stylistically. That is a low possession percentage team. And Ryan Giles in a low possession percentage team is just not going to work. It's going to highlight his deficiencies more than it's going to highlight his strengths. And so, yeah, to see him at a championship team and a championship team that are in the same bracket as us, being a playoff contender and not at like a Leicester, Southampton, Leeds, etc., or Ipswich, is, yeah, that's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's a playoff competitor that has a really good asset there in Giles that suits our system a lot.
Yeah. But I would have not paid $5 million for Ryan Giles. Not a chance. Not a chance. I like Giles. I think he's brilliant. Going forward, he was sensational for us last year, and I think he'll do well at Hull, and good luck to him. But for £5 million, I would not pay for Ryan Giles. Not a chance. So, and that's it. That's kind of where I stand on it. But for, like, we've done well to recruit Bangor and Engel for, I think we've paid £1.9 million for both of them. And then, you know, if we paid $5 million for Giles, like, Jesus Christ, why have we done that? But yeah, look, everyone had a big agenda on Giles defensively last year. I think we're better defensively with Engel going forward. Let him off the hook and let Engel cook is what I'm kind of saying. Maybe it's a hashtag, maybe it's a t-shirt, but let Engel cook. That's what I'm going to say. But we got another question. It's around Josh Corbin, and there was a load about Corbin in our question tweet, just around like, why is he here? Why is he still playing? What does he bring? Is he good enough? And it'd be good to get your thoughts on it as well, Matt, Demo, because you did allude to it, so I feel like I'd be a bit harsh coming back to you and letting you repeat what you were just about to say. But for me, I think that, and I said this a few weeks ago, you can't fault Corbin for doing what he did from September to December, because he did a job and we need him to. Is he good enough for Championship or where we want to get to? Probably not. I'm glad that he did the stopgap, but we should have invested in a striker in January if the right person was available. They weren't, or for whatever reason, something just didn't work out, and now we're, I wouldn't say stuck for him, that's harsh, but I just think that he's just ineffective more times than he's effective, if that is the politest way to say it. And I don't think he's shite. I think he's just like, it's just not as effective as I wanted to be in certain moments. But like, a key thing today was when he came on, you could see Sunderland's line went higher and they were going higher and higher. They were trying to pin Borough up for, because one, he wasn't getting it to feet, and we didn't have an outlet in running it behind. So you were able to push higher. And with Azaz is the same, and you're hoping really if you were to do that sub again, maybe put Silvera up top, maybe try and move something about, maybe bring Alex Gilbert on, or bring on a wing, or even like if you wanted to bring on like Matt Clark or Luke Thomas, push Engel up, move Azaz to the right, put Silvera up top. I would rather us do that than probably what we did with Corbett today. But yeah, it's not as effective as I want it to be. And then Matt, what do you think? Your final piece of the Corbin consensus, and then we'll move on to Paul's question and wrap things off.
Well, I think to answer the question on why is he here, he's here because we've not invested and gotten anybody else, or we've not got more quality and depth in that position. I think it says it all that he was intended to go out on loan in the summer to Plymouth. That says it all. I think as much as Carrick wants to dress it up that he's here, he's our player, we want to develop him, I get it, but we were looking to loan him out. And I think if we'd have maybe gotten a striker in, say we got a striker in early January, there's probably a chance we would have then tried to loan him out. So he's here because we haven't got the quality and depth required. I'm not going to blame Josh Corbin, because at the end of the day, he's one of the two or three starting strikers, one of the two strikers we've had available to us, at least for the first half of the season. So he's obviously going to have to play quite a lot of minutes. He's going to have to try and chip in best he can. I'm not going to knock his effort. I'm not going to knock his endeavour. But at the end of the day, I don't know if it's doing him more harm than good. I think he's getting good experience, but I think the club are gambling on him developing as a player, and I just don't think he's going to develop as well in this Borough side than he would elsewhere. I think he'd be better going out on loan to a League One side or a Championship side who are best suited to his strengths, and he can get better as a player there. So I'm not... Yeah, he's only here because we haven't brought a striker in, and yeah, whether it's going to benefit him in the long run, I don't know, but we definitely should have strengthened in January. We didn't. So I think it's more the club's fault that he's in the position he is more than Josh Coburn. But I agree with you, Johnny. I just don't... he is ineffective more often than he is effective. I think he has to play in a certain system that complements him more. And I just... More often than not, the way Borough play is not going to work for Josh Coburn. So it's a shame that I think it's just not working out at the moment.
Yeah. We need to bring back the big striker, little striker combo in football. And he might settle a little bit more on that one. And then final question... Danny, you already said, so I won't come to you, but it was from Paul, and he says, do you think we can make the playoffs? Yes or no, Matt? Do you think Borough can make the playoffs?
We can, but I don't think we will. Mm. I think we're screaming 8th to 10th place at the moment. Until we've got a consistent squad without injuries, and until I've seen we can put a consistent run together, and until our home form improves, it's very hard to make an argument that we can surpass Coventry, Hull, West Brom, etc., and get ourselves into the top 6 at the moment.
Okay, then we'll move on now to everyone's favourite place. It is the Prison Place. Ah, yes, the Prison Place. Only place where to give praise to a player, coach, or staff member. Matt's Borough shirt just behind him. I think it's the 94-95 shirt as well. Dana's gone with the 99 shirt to 2000, and I'm just in a black jumper. So I've really let the side down there as well. But Prison Place time. Who's in your Prison Place, Dana Moll? Who gets the Holy Grail that is your Prison Place nomination?
I'm going to go with two players. I'm going to go Sam Greenwood firstly, because I think that was a much better performance from him, and I definitely want to see more of that. And then I'm also going to praise the Rav Vandenberg goal line clearance, because upon second viewing of it, like, he couldn't not have cleared that. But then at the same time, I mean, it definitely spawned a reaction from the crowd, who at that point were flat based on what they'd seen. So I really enjoyed that moment. And his performance, again, you know, he's just a really astute player and a very mature defender, considering that he's 19 as well. It's crazy. He's one of the signings of the summer for me. So yeah, Greenwood and Rav Vandenberg getting my praise of place this week.
Matt, who are you going to go for?
I'm going to have to put Marcus Force in there, because just the technique and the touch and the finish is just amazing. I know it's kind of standard Marcus Force, we expect that from him, but it was still absolutely amazing. And I would agree with Dana, and I would put Sam Greenwood in there. I've kind of been a bit sceptical on Greenwood throughout the season. I think his numbers maybe blur the perception of him a little bit, because I think there are a lot of games or a lot of periods in games where he has been very ineffective. And you could argue when he's not on the ball, or when Borough don't have the ball, you may as well not have Sam Greenwood on the pitch at times. But it was very good today to see him making them runs in behind. And as Dana said, I couldn't agree more, that there is maybe a glimmer of hope that we could use him in that role. Whether he's got the ability to finish at the end of it, I don't know, but at least we could use him to stretch defences. And obviously it helped create the chances Az got, which he should have done better with. So Force deserves to be in there, definitely. And Sam Greenwood too. I'm hoping that's maybe a sign of things to come for him.
Yeah, and I think just to round us off as well, I'm going to go with, I'll agree with Marcus Force. I thought he was excellent. His just form in general has been superb. I thought Engel was really good today. I thought Ballas was good today. In terms of my praise, yeah. I would say, even though his mistake, I would like to praise Tom Glover for what he's done prior to that mistake. I think he's done really, really well to bed in. I still think De Jong is the better goalkeeper, and I think he should come back in when he's back. Matt, I know you really liked that comment. I just think that De Jong is just the much better goalkeeper, and that's cool. Like, I think it's just a preference for me, and I think he's better with his feet. I think he's better, you know, with his distribution element as well. So yeah, I'd just like to see Dane come back. But yeah, for me, Glover, really, really good prior to the mistake. But in terms of moving on to something a little bit different, I would like to kind of look into the January transfer review now, because you know, Borough have brought in three players in the January window. Finn Azaz, of course, which we know got a permanent from Aston Villa via Plymouth. Luke Ayling came in on loan. He's out of contract in the summer. And so is Luke Thomas as well, the left-back who came from Leicester, who was at Sheffield United earlier in the season. No ham sandwiches for Luke, though. He missed that ball, and he's came on loan for 6 months, but also he's out of contract in the summer as well. So two big auditions for those in their futures. But then transfers out as well. Hayden Coulson went out on loan again. Brian Belonga went out on loan as well. Morgan Rogers and then Cam Kavanagh as well went out on a permanent to Bradford too. In terms of the glaring obvious... that we didn't bring in a striker. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on two things, really. Obviously, Morgan Rogers, I know you guys spoke about it, but I'll come to that in a moment. But Callum Kavanagh as well, just because a permanent, you know, went to Bradford City. Do you think it was the right move, Dana, for Kavanagh to go on a permanent?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you see with some strikers that come through the academy, I think Steve Walker's a good example of this, that technically... Actually, maybe he's not, but technically good and looks from the eye test like a really nifty kind of forward, but probably lacks the physicality. I think the reason why I say Steve Walker is maybe there was other circumstances there that didn't enable him to make it into the team. But with Kavanagh, no, I'm not surprised. It just seemed like he was the type of player where his next step was quite clearly to go to a football league side, a League Two side in Bradford. And I know people say, well, he scored so many goals under 23 or under 21 level, but it's just about taking that next step. And I think you've got to have the physical profile to be able to deal with it. And yeah, maybe he just doesn't have that. But yeah, I will say, I probably should preface this by saying that I haven't watched an awful lot of Cav, but from the brief viewings that I've seen, I think he's got the technical ability, but the physical thing I think is a really big important attribute to be able to step up to Football League, or at least the Championship anyway. And yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and look, what, 20-year-old now, Cav, I think he needs games and needs to play regularly at a league club. You know, if you're getting him on loan again, then you're having to look at him and it's like another year down the line, his development. I just think it's the best move for him to go on a permanent now and develop. You know, we've probably got some sort of clauses in that deal to bring him back. If it worked out, there'd probably be a selling clause there or thereabouts. You know, I don't think we're that stupid in terms of those things. But for me, I just think it was the right move for him to move on a permanent. But we speak a lot about strikers because, you know, obviously Rogers was filling in the gap. Sam Greenwood is now filling that gap. Lighter last injured Corburn. How big of a miss was it, Matt, that we just didn't bring in a striker? Because it was the one glare and obvious thing that we needed to really nail down in the January window. It was seemed like from Kieran Scott's interview with BBC Tees that we looked fairly confident we were going to get one, but it just never really materialised, did it?
Yeah, it didn't. I was quite surprised. I headed into the January window after that interview with Kieran Scott and I thought, we've got a plan. And I thought we've got something lined up, and I was expecting maybe not as quick as Archer, because I think Archer signed on the 2nd of January, was it, in last season? It was pretty quick, wasn't it? It was like it was all done and dusted, and we were waiting for the window to start. And I thought we were going to have something similar. And as the window went on, it felt clearer that Borough just wasn't the right player for the right price. And as much as I completely back the idea that we should only look to buy the right player for the right price, we shouldn't overpay, we shouldn't panic buy, it goes completely against, you know, what Borough are trying to do. And we've seen it backfire on us so much in the past. So I completely get that approach. But I still think for this season, it's pivotal that we got a striker. And I think we should have looked at the loan market. And I know, yeah, maybe there wasn't the player available. I know Premier League sides didn't make many signings. The domino effect that usually happens following that didn't really happen. It was a quiet window. So maybe it was a lot tougher than maybe we think. But it would have been the difference between me being confident of us getting into the playoff mix and us not. Because I personally think we're no further forward, but we're no further back than where we were pre-January. We've made some good stopgap signings at right back and left back because of long-term injuries. You could argue as a sort of balanced out with the Rodgers outgoing as well. And I think people maybe expected that we're going to get rid of a player like Rogers for such a good fee, we would reinvest some of that this window. And it was a bit deflating to see we didn't. So a striker is a pivotal gap for me that I am very disappointed we haven't filled. And that essentially for me is the reason as to why I don't think we'll get top six. I think fully fit, defence is great, midfield's great. But even with a fully fit forward line, unless it's forced down the middle, that's the glaring gap for me, which makes me think that we're not quite going to get the playoffs this season because we've missed out on the striker that we knew we needed even from the summer.
Yeah, and then was there anyone at all? I know you're looking at or any sort of deals where you were kind of thinking, I wish we kind of brought this player in to help us go forward.
Not really. There was Duncan Maguire that I mentioned on the podcast, but I think with him, and there's a big fiasco around, has he actually signed for Blackburn or not? They seem like an absolute basket case because that's the second January in a row where they've had a bit of a cock-up with the registration of a player. But with him, I think he had such a good season, debut season in the MLS. You don't know if that's a flash in the pan. You don't know how good of a player he could be and what his ceiling is and what his floor is. So yeah, there was no one really. I know there was Brandon Vazquez who ended up going to Mexico. That seemed to be, anyway, from reports, maybe our top target in the winter. But no, there was nobody really that I looked at. In terms of our link list, anyway, that I thought, yeah, we could do with him. Because they were all a bit much of a muchness, to be honest.
Did you like the guy from Wimbledon, Dana? I can't remember his name. Oh, he went to Ipswich.
Al Hamidi. Yeah, I completely forgot about him. Al Hamidi, he's a smart signing for Ipswich, I think. And he was a former target of Boros. I think it was the summer before last we were linked with him. But I'm not really surprised that we didn't go in for him, especially if a club like Ipswich are involved, who are smart within themselves and also gone in for automatic promotion. But yeah, he could have been one, to be fair.
Mm. Smart, but also owned by a billionaire. so it makes things a little bit easier on that front. Mm. But in terms of, like, it is a bit of a glaring miss that we haven't brought a striker in. I think I'm having it as well. Like, I just think that I'm a bit like, is that a bit of a too big of a step up? Like, I don't really know. For £1 million, you kind of go, well, maybe it's a risk worth taking or a punt. Definitely, I wouldn't have paid a lot more than that. But, you know, for us to lose Rodgers, and my thoughts on it, given that I was on the show with you guys, I'm kind of just like I'm at ease with it. It was very much a, you know what, you're going to get 16 million for him. That was the reported fee in total if it comes off eventually. And if it does come off, you get a sell-on clause. That's not what you're just going to get from. You're not just going to get 16 million. You're going to get way more than that. You're going to get probably a fairly hefty price come to the club from nothing. And, you know, I don't think you can ever turn that down for a player, to be honest. He goes back to his home club, got good money for him. You bought him on the cheap. If you said to me in November that Morgan Rodgers would go for 16 million in the January, I'd have laughed at you. For me, I think it's a great move all around for everyone, to be honest. And I'd liked him. I really, really liked Morgan Rodgers. I thought he was arguably one of Boro's best players and definitely most influential in key moments. But I just think it's a good move all around. It's a shame we didn't bring someone in, but if there's more players in the summer that are available and more suited to us, Tyrese Campbell, then I just think it'd be more beneficial for us to do that. But guys, how would you rate the transfer window out of 10, 3 in, 4 out, fairly, you know, past the stopgap and to the summer, I guess. But Dino, how would you rate it out of 10?
Solid 5. I agree with Matt. We've not really further forward. We're no further back. We've obviously filled positions that need to be filled, i.e. the fullback positions. And then we brought in a good player in Azaz, who is undoubtedly the signing of the window. So yeah, 5 out of 10 for me. Pretty middle of the pack, pretty bang average.
Yeah, I'd go 5 as well. And then for you, Matt, what are you going to go for?
5. Absolutely. Oh. It's just a bog standard transfer window. Yeah.
All 5s. And that's it. But let's move on to Bristol City now, because, you know, Borough do Bristol City next Saturday. And we like to do our trivia every single podcast now. It's becoming a bit of a staple to this show. And speaking of, you know, household names and staples, I was going to chat about Leroy later because he's a household name in many, many households because he's played for that many clubs. And the question about Leroy later, because he did play for both clubs. He played for Bristol City at the start of his career in the Borough just a little bit later on. And he has played for a number of clubs since. But how many goals in total did he score for Borough and Bristol City combined? So your timer starts now. Yeah. Yes, time is up. Time is up. So for Leroy Leiter then, he played 96 games for Bristol City, 82 for Middlesbrough. So a lot of games there. But how many did he score in total? Dan, are you looking very sheepish there? So I'm going to quote to you first.
Oh,
how many goals did Leroy Leiter score combined for Borough and Bristol City?
I've gone 23, and I feel like that's a very low number because I didn't expect him to have made that many appearances for Bristol City. But I'll just go with it. I'll own it. I'll say it with my chest. 23. Yeah. With a squiggly question mark. I never put the question marks like that, so I don't know what I've pulled out the bag there, but yeah.
You go for 23, you know, you go for that. So your chest and it's funny. Matt, what did you go for?
I'm a mess, to be honest with you. I went 35, then I went 25, and I scribbled out and went down the middle and went, I sod it, 30. No idea.
Well,
I'm scared.
I think you guys are forgetting how prolific Leroy Leiter was back in the day. Because he scored 36 goals in 96 games for Bristol City, and he scored 20 in 82 for Middlesbrough. So it was 56 goals in total. He also played at Reading as well, where he played 100 games and scored 32 as well. So for those three clubs, you know, he's racking up some goals, and then just fell off a cliff from there, to be honest. Yeah, just fell off a cliff from there. But good old Leroy Leiter, you know. I used to love him under Tony Mowbray. It was fantastic.
I thought he'd be the classic Wikipedia footballer of, like, Bristol City, 23, and then in brackets, 9. That's what I was expecting. But, yeah, I underestimated. He was a goal scorer. It was Leroy Leiter, wasn't he?
Prolific. I'm just joking. So, Bristol City, then, how are we feeling about it? Because, you know, new manager, Liam Manning, as well. We're not really new anymore, but is one of his first home games. He beat Middlesbrough, and it was a really frustrating game, I would say. A very typical Borough of this season as well. And we'll try and get some more info later in the week around the game. But what is your predictions going into it? Matt, how do you feel about next Saturday's game?
Normally, I'd be quietly confident. But with Borough's home form at the moment, most of my confidence is completely gone. Just our lack of goal scoring at home. I think we've scored 16 goals in 15 home games or something. It's pretty low scoring. It's pretty average. And Bristol City are naturally a bogey team. I feel like every time they've come to Riverside, they've won 1-0. I don't know why I think that. It's a very Bristol City away at the Riverside performance. But we drew 1-1 at against Rotherham at home. We drew 1-1 against Sunderland. I'm going to go 1-1 again.
1-1 again. Negative. It's like one of the buses, you know, like one draw, two come at once. I think with McGree back, I feel confident. He just gives me a bit of confidence that I didn't think I'd have. I just think he's so good, and maybe unlocks Engel a little bit more as well. But yeah, I think we go and win this game. And they're a good side, Bristol City. You know, they were my like surprise pick of the season. And they go through like flurries each year where they look really good and then they just somehow dip, and I don't get it. But again, dark horses for, I would say, you know, for the remainder of the season. I think they could still have a good end to the season. I was watching something from Liam Manning the other week around just like his philosophy and how he plays, and it was really interesting. Dana, what's your predictions and how are you feeling about this game?
Well, I'm a little bit nervous now that I've seen that we've only managed to win twice at home against Bristol City in the last 10 appearances going back to 2010. It's just very typical of us to have them rock up to the Riverside and for us to lose. So, I mean, our most recent win at home against them was in 2021, so not that long ago. Who scored in that game? Oh, Piezu and Crooks, lovely. Oh, that was at the beginning of the season. I remember that one. I'm going to go with a win, a hopeful win. I think I'll go with 2-1 Borough.
Okay, 2-1 Borough. So draw for Matt, a win for me, and a win for you, Dana, as well. And that's it. Thank you very much for joining me, guys, as always. To listeners and the viewers, thank you very much for watching and listening to the podcast. Well, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on your podcast provider, a thumbs up on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, of course, because 40% of you watch this video every single week and haven't subscribed. So naughty, naughty you. But for right now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. The game today was the story of our season. And don't forget to live, laugh, and Leroy Leiter. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was our Borough Match Day Chatter in a pod. Up the Borough.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.